Welcome to the Law Firm Growth Lab, the science of scaling your practice. 3, 2, 1,
action.
Before I jump into this first one, which is the transition from O1 to EB1A, mm-hmm. Is that right? How do we want to frame that? Is that something that most immigration attorneys do? They try to move on from O1 to EB1A, or is this something that kind of you're doing that's a little unique?
Most folks do it with, certain populations. There's a taxation issue that they might have to stay in the O1 forever. So it's really more, attorneys do it in general, but it's more dependent on the client's needs.
Okay. Do you have in the back of your mind some thoughts about that and maybe some anecdotal stories that you can explain to people?
I do.
Brilliant. And this is for people that already have O1 status, or people that might be wanting to apply for an O1, or both?
Both, because some people come to me for an EB1A, and then I say, you don't want an EB1A, you want an O1.
Got it. So, but the common thought is they want to work in the U.S.
Yes.
All right, brilliant. Hello, this is Scott Berry, your host of Immigration Nation. Clyne Powell is working on the operations and the back end today, and we're with Flavia Santos Lloyd, a very special guest. Hello, Flavia.
Thank you so much for having me here. I'm so excited. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here today with you.
We have a really great discussion coming up. We're going to talk about O1s, EB1As, and you're the perfect person to talk to about this. I'll let you go first. I will preface it. Just tell them a little bit about your firm. But you and I were friends on LinkedIn for quite a while, and then you were speaking at the AILA National Conference, and we got together and said, boy, you need to come on the show. And so thank you for doing that. You're a renowned industry expert. The industry knows you, loves you, and trusts you. And so thank you for talking about this topic today.
Thank you so much. And
talk about your firm.
Well, I have a boutique firm. My background is very broad because I came from the humanitarian removal side, and then I transitioned to business immigration. And when I did that, I transitioned to a very special niche, which is sports, entertainment, arts, immigration. So my firm is a boutique firm. We do everything immigration, but really carries the name of the firm is the work that we do in the entertainment, the sports, arts, unique talent space. I do not have, sometimes we do have the PhDs, but they're not my bread and butter. My bread and butter are the creatives in general and athletes.
Perfect. So let's jump right in it. We're going to talk about foreign nationals that want to work in the U.S., specifically people that might be a fit for O1s or EBs. Will you talk to us about that now?
Well, you see, if they're here on an O1, sometimes it's an art, it's not a science to determine whether or not they have enough for the EB1A. The community and the clients in general, they feel, well, I'm really extraordinary. I have the Einstein visa or the genius visa. Therefore, ergo, I get the EB1A. And that's already something that we have to manage expectations right at the beginning. I talk to my clients and I say, well, it's a different level. It's a different analysis. And we really have to sit down and talk about whether or not this is what they want. A lot of times folks come in and they say, I want a green card. I want to live in the U.S. And then I start asking questions. For example, if someone is from Brazil, Brazil does not have a tax treaty with the U.S., so you are subject to double taxation. So it's beyond immigration. Oh, have you talked? You make a lot of money. Have you talked to an accountant before we're doing this? Are you going to be spending more than 180 days, 83 days for tax purposes and 180 days for residency purposes? So sometimes, my folks on O1, they started the consultation wanting a green card and they leave and they say, I will stick with the O1. That's much better. On the other hand, I have the opposite. I have people who are even overseas and they don't even have the O1. They do qualify for the O1, but then we are looking into their long-term objectives, what they want to do, and they have a family, then they want to really move to the U.S. And I'm like, well, how about we go for the EB1A? So that's the preliminary conversation we have to have before we talk about the qualifications and the bullet point of the criteria. Because why do I preface that I start a conversation with this? Because I'll give an example. I have a very famous singer. In his country, he's really well known. He's a big deal. He got a green card. And then he comes to me with a $900,000 bill from the IRS because he did not have that planning. He is just really good. Obviously, the clean green card, and he got it. But A, he didn't want to live here. And B, the tax issue was a big deal. So I actually was hired to surrender the green card and actually get him a no. So I think this preliminary conversation is really important with the clients to really understand what they want and how they want to, you know, if that makes sense for them. Now, assuming that we got that out of the way, my thing is, let's look at your evidence. I say that the EB1A is the O1 with steroids. So just to really bring it home, like, oh, okay. Like, so let's, sometimes we work with folks during their O1, their first 3 years, to develop strength to actually add more evidence to the case. Because as you know, most of the folks who will be watching this know, you may have 10 out of 10 of the criteria and still get a denial of the EB1A. There's a huge element of subjectivity. And that's why I go back to the point that this is more of an art than a science, because sometimes you look at a particular case and it's like, I'm ready to pull the trigger. And then you go, oh, and you get an RFE. I got a while back asking me the relevance of the Latin Grammy. And I'm going, what? So there's that part. But I think in general, it comes down to two things in a very short way. Then you can take away and ask more questions. But first, really understanding your goals as far as your life in the U.S. from a financial, familial, and all the big picture thing. And then going through the criteria and the evidence to see if passes muster. And the final thing is, when clients ask me, Flavia, what are my chances? I never say 100%. You can come here with an Oscar and I will still, you may get an officer who has some questions about your talent.
And you don't get to make the decision.
I don't. And that's why sometimes I tell clients, let's develop more stuff. Let's work together. Do you have another award that is coming up? Do you have any other evidence that you can build? I never feel there's enough. Of course, at some point I have to tell, let's just pull the trigger and do this. I recently did this to a client. Can we just move on? You good. Let's just go from there. I think those are the major highlights. And I mean, it can be more specific. I can keep going, but I just want to have a big overview of how I approach these cases.
The O-1, talk a little bit about like minimum qualification, just so someone could decide, oh, I don't have a chance, or wait a minute, this might be an option for me.
Well, I will start with, you don't have to be famous to get an O-1. Okay, so there are two types of O-1s. The O-1A, if those are for the athletes, the business people, the researchers, the academics, and then you have the O-1B for the arts. And within the arts, we have arts in general, and then you have motion pictures and television, which is a little bit of a higher standard. But the thing is, people think that for them to qualify for the O-1, they have to be famous. And that's not the case. I do O-1s for nail tech, for eyelash extension folks, for burlesque dancers, for CFOs. You have a wide range of qualifications. So I think that's very important too, to set the stage that if you're really good at what you do, a good start is to look at an O-1A. Now, the good thing about the O-1A is that it's objective in the sense that if you have the three out of the criteria, you will most likely get approved. And I'm being very lawyerly here, most likely.
It depends.
But in a nutshell, you need to have three major things to qualify for an O-1. Number one, you have to have a sponsor, but not in the traditional sense, and a Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. It can be a U.S. citizen who is going to be your agent. It can be a legal permanent resident. It can be a company. It's a much more flexible sponsorship relationship than an H-1B, for example. So don't get intimidated if you don't have a sponsor, because that is the quote unquote, the easiest part of the process. The second thing you have to have is you have to have an itinerary. You have to have gigs. So if you're going to be a consultant, IT consultant, you have to have prospects. If you are a nail tech, you have to have salons that will be engaging with you. And it's not an offer of employment. It's more of like a letter of intent. And you have to show that you're not here to speculate. This is very important.
Yeah, you're here to work.
Because you just, oh, I have great talent. I have this sponsor, but I have nothing in prospect to do in the US. That's not going to work. And the third thing, which is really important, is the talent, right? If you are in the O1A, we have to show your publications. You have to show that you had, you know, an important position in an organization. How much money you've made? Do you have awards? Are you a member of an organization? That is really important. The O1B, same thing. Have you worked in lead positions in your field? Do you have press about your work? Do you have recommendation letters saying how great you are and the things you've done in your career? Do you make a lot of money? Again, I'm simplifying criteria just to bring it home, but this can be applied to any profession. And if it doesn't fit in a box, for example, there's like sales of video cassettes and tickets and box office, just a lot of stuff that is outdated. We can use what's called comparable evidence. What does that mean? We can find whatever is applicable in your profession that would fit that particular criteria. So if you are an engineer and you don't have a lot of papers published or you don't have papers at all, but you've given a lot of presentations in conferences about your field of expertise, we can, you know, make that evidence work. So the bottom line is what you have to do first is go through an overview, an assessment of what you have, because a lot of the things that I'm saying here can be developed. Now, I'm very careful when I say developed. I'm not saying to buy press releases, okay? Buy fake materials about your work. But if you're talented and if you're good at what you do, you may be able to get organic press. You may be already be working with a publicist, or you may be leading a project at your company that may be saving the company a whole lot of money. So it is having those three components of the recipe. If you in the talent area, there is a gap, I call those build-a-bears. We can help build that bear. That's part of what we do and what we enjoy. Those are much more pleasurable, actually. When you met with someone who had the beginning of a no visa and they're at the cusp, and you just help them like, okay, now we can move forward with this. It's pretty cool. We're actually filing one of those cases this week. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
It seems like strategy is a big part of this.
It's a huge part of it. Of course, have I had denials that I didn't expect? It's part of the deal. But at the same time, knowing, having that gut feeling like, okay, legally, I have a good solid case, or maybe I shouldn't file this right now. I have a comedian right now. And this person is very funny, but the subject of comedy sketch is not something popular right now. And my advice is let's not file it. You have the talent, you have the sponsor, you have the itinerary, but what your subject is something that is controversial, is strategy. This person is going to stay in the other status for a little bit, and then we see things change or move forward with the person's case. And I think that's the part, the fun part too. The strategy is really fun.
Yeah, you know, I love that because I think on one hand, people really need to choose their immigration attorneys very carefully. That's why the consultation piece is just is worth gold in itself, because you're going to find, sadly, some people that were like, all right, yeah, let's file it and see what happens. And there's going to be people like your firm that says, well, let's strategize about this a little bit. When's the right time? What's the right approach? How far along are you in your journey? Do you have all the pieces in place? Like that, I want people to have that type of approach from you rather than someone who just says, yeah, I can fill out the paperwork and let's submit it and see what happens.
Yeah, and there's different schools of thought, but my clientele, I do not have a lot of corporate clients. My clients really, it's a lot of money for them. It's a lot of hardship to actually be able to pay the filing fees, pay legal fees. So I'd rather say, go do this and come back in 6 months and we'll be in a better position. While I cannot guarantee, I can tell you we'll have a better chance than filing something for the sake of filing. It's like evidence. There are some attorneys who will just say, I will withhold evidence because in case we have a request for evidence, I have additional documents. I don't particularly agree with that school of thought. I'd like to send as much information as I have at the time of filing so the officer has a comprehensive overview of the client and we have a better chance. But it's just really the philosophy and the client. Sometimes I will tell the client, I have someone who is better for what your goals are. And sometimes part of being, you know, honest, I guess, is just saying, this is not my cup of tea. I think so-and-so is better suited to help you because you have that a particular skill set that I don't have. And that there's nothing wrong with that. I know that we all have to pay bills, but I think it's also the ethical responsibilities we should have for our clients.
Flavia, listen, I think they're going to be people that hear about the O1 and the EB and the way you approach people's prospects for working in the U.S. Will you share how people could contact you if they wanted to have a consultation and let you kind of evaluate their situation?
Absolutely. So a lot of people find me through social media. So it can be at on Instagram at Santos Lloyd Law altogether. That's the handle at Santos Lloyd Law. Or LinkedIn, just type my name, I will come up. And of course, the traditional ways, our phone number is 949-316-0078. If you like WhatsApp, our WhatsApp is 949-529-2419. And last but not least, the email, which is info@santosloydlaw.com.
Fantastic. Flavia, you're one of the good ones. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Scott. I appreciate it.